What is going on, Banties? Welcome back to another episode of Basits and Banter. I am one of your co-hosts, Haley McClenny, joined by my fabulous friend,
Sam Fisher. Fabulous, as usual.
The best lion that ever lioned.
Grr.
The best softball player to ever come out of LA. We're going to talk about LA for quite a bit of time today as we get into our top 25.
Yeah. 100%.
Speaking of LA, UC of LA swept Stanford this weekend. Thoughts, reaction, obstruction, not obstruction. Oh, thoughts, reactions.
Listen, Banties, this whole episode is about to be about this weekend up at Stanford. On the road, sweep for anybody. Crazy.
Hard.
What a weekend. What good softball. I know we were talking about Texas, Oklahoma, about how strong those games were, how it felt like the postseason. Same thing to be said about Stanford, UCLA. My goodness.
I would throw Tennessee and LSU into that category from this weekend as well.
Absolutely.
Seven combined runs in that series. Seven total runs in the series.
That is seven.
Arkansas put that up in one inning on Sunday. I don't really want to talk about that.
No. I was going to avoid it. Avoidance is best.
Avoidance at all costs. We're in denial over here. But I do want to – okay, I'm going to ask you this crystal clear as can be. Was it obstruction? Was it not?
Not obstruction.
It's not obstruction. Answer.
Not even close
to obstruction.
Like, the conversation in the Texas-Oklahoma game about that call that with the errant throw was far more up the line than this throw.
Correct.
And I still think that one was reasonably, like, still within reasonable limits up the line. It wasn't errant, in my opinion. But this one was, how do you say, on the money?
She made a perfect throw.
Perfect.
It was a perfect throw. And perfect. When you look at the different camera angles and stuff, too, the runner had a clear path to the plate. Like, I saw absolutely nothing of obstruction, and I understand why the rule's in place. Player safety is super important.
Yep.
Speaking from a person that's had multiple concussions playing softball.
Oof.
Like, safety is very important. I don't want to run into a catcher. Mm-mm. It's dangerous.
Ouch.
However, they made little to no contact. I think the only contact they made
was
the tag.
The tag. Yeah.
Which means you're out.
See you later.
Not you obstructed with.
No, and you can see as she's sliding past, as she's being tagged, she like touches home plate. She had a clear path. The catcher, what a phenomenal job of positioning her body, receiving the throw, giving a path, but not giving up the run. Just the play was picture perfect.
It was.
And they called it correctly on the field.
They did. To the naked eye, they called it correctly. Are we overthinking obstruction?
And now we are.
Are we overthinking leaving the base early?
100%. It seems like a plan B in your back pocket. Like, oh, well, in case I can just review it.
I hate that.
And I don't, it, you know, like I stand firmly in my belief that mistakes, bad calls, they're all part of the game, right? You deal with it because it's part of the game. We have a really interesting human error piece to our game.
Mm-hmm.
This is making it to where now we're having robot error with video. Like, yeah, what is it? Like, what are we doing? We're going backwards now with these.
I agree with you. I think, like, we want replay in the game because we want to make sure we get calls right.
Yes.
Just in terms of, like, safe and out.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
I don't want replay to affect whether or not I leave a base early or whether or not obstruction is called. I understand why we can review but to me, that's just not, like, it takes away from the game. And I really think that set UCLA up to go on and get the sweep. Like, I don't know that Stanford, like, mentally recovered from that.
It's tough. Yeah.
It's tough to do. And I know Jessica Allister, and rightfully so, lost her mind.
Yeah. I fully agree with her reaction.
But it's like, in a Friday night game, it's so hard to overcome something like that mentally.
Yeah.
for the
and
weekend.
Then to go and lose on, like, try to bounce back, try your hardest Saturday, don't pull it out, then come Sunday, you're just, I mean, I imagine feeling defeated.
So yeah,
like, God, what a perfect defensive play. That's textbook. Like, you as an outfielder, I imagine watching it, you're like, wow, perfect textbook. And then I can think about times as a shortstop, right? You go out and you're like, maybe they need me as a cut. Oh no, they don't need me. They don't need me. That's
perfect. I don't know. I just think about how many times you do that in practice.
Yeah.
And
yep.
Doing it in practice that many times, you don't make throws like that all the time.
No.
Like, even if you rep it out 100 times, you'll maybe have 10 throws that are like that.
Right, right.
That throw was the rarest of the rare.
It was perfect.
And for you to have it taken away by an obstruction call is just...
No, it's brutal.
It's all I have to say about it.
And the internet agreed.
But kudos to UCLA, too. I mean...
Took advantage.
Took three games. They did get the sweep.
And I think that's something that we talked about after this weekend is UCLA did not have a good start to their season. They did not play like UCLA plays historically, and they have been picking it up when you want to pick it up.
They're first in the pack right now.
Yeah, that what and, a turnaround.
And everybody's talking about the Stanfords, the Washingtons. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
UCLA. I think a lot of people just wrote UCLA off after they got off and, to yeah. a not so good start.
Yeah,
and they are competing.
Yeah,
it's been a fabulous turnaround. And I could say the same thing about Florida State as well. As they've gotten into their meat and potatoes of the ACC schedule, they're taking series from people. They're sweeping people. They're starting to pick back up. And I think that's going to bode well for both of these teams because, like you said, this is when you want to get hot.
Yeah.
And can now, you imagine? I think UCLA is probably going to get a regional.
I imagine.
Let's just say they don't.
Ooh.
Do you want UCLA in your region?
No.
No.
Please don't send them here. No, thank you.
Don't send them here. Do you want Florida State in your region?
Nope.
Who played for a natty last year? No, thank you. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, it's shaping up to be a really, really great postseason.
And it is.
Speaking of that, I thought Tennessee LSU this weekend was a super regional.
What a, like you said, seven.
Seven combined runs.
That's
seven.
Tough. Those are, and that is a, every moment counts.
Literally
weekend.
Shout out to Athletes Unlimited.
I took it right from
it truly does count. But I want to give props to Karen Weekly because all season long, Carlin Pickens has been the Friday Sunday starter. Mm-hmm. Rightfully so. She throws 74 at the knees, and it's like, I don't know how you're supposed to hit that. So knowing how well LSU prepares on the hitting side, she decides to start their number two. I don't think they have a number two. I think it's 1A and 1B.
Double aces.
Higgins and Gottschall. But they start Peyton Gottschall on Friday night, who is the polar opposite of Pickens. Pickens is 74 and down.
Yeah.
Gottschall is 62.
Yeah, spinny.
Mean curve, mean rise, floating, spinning, dipping, diving, dunking. LSU was in the batting cages with the hack attacks cranked up to like 75, 76
oh my gosh.
Before the game.
Mm-hmm.
And out comes spinny Peyton Gottschall. And she had a perfect game going into the sixth inning. Like, just an absolute dog.
Against LSU.
Against LSU. Like, yeah. I love the energy that both of those pitchers pitch with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Tennessee can make a really deep run. I was
100%.
Really, really impressed with them this weekend.
Yeah. 100%. They've proven it, I think, all season. Like, we talk about teams that come out and build, right? They get mm-hmm. to where they need to go. Tennessee has been playing there since February.
Yes.
So those are two different stories there. So the sustainability, they're proving that they've got it.
Yes, they do. And they can beat you a ton of different ways. They can beat you with a long ball. They can beat you in a pitcher's duel. They can beat you in a 5-4 or a 10-9 type of game. Like, if they have to, like, they've got talent everywhere.
Yeah. First pitch to last.
Everywhere.
Yeah. I love it, man. Shoot. That's it. That took up a lot of our time to talk about college softball, but those are really important. This was a really interesting weekend. I feel like we say that every week where we're like, hey, so something crazy happened.
No, but it's true. And we didn't even talk about Virginia taking the series from Duke.
We did not talk about that.
But that happened.
That happened. Yeah. Duke, man. I think this is a good transition to talk about top our own personal top five. We did share them with each other before. But first we need to talk about a different top five, if you will. We're going to go off the softball track real quick, which is weird because this is a podcast about softball, but it was a big weekend in the world of music.
That it was.
The queen herself, Taylor Swift, dropped an album midnight on April 19th and said, here's 16 songs. But then if you were a real lunatic and stayed up till 2 a.m. East Coast time, mind you, she dropped 15 more songs. So there was 31 new Taylor Swift songs over the weekend. And Halo and I decided that we would make a top five of what we think so far.
Of the Tortured Poets
Department. Of the Tortured Poets Department. What a name. Hey, what, do you want to take it first or do you want me to lead off?
I would love if you led off here. You are the truer Swiftie of the two of us. I will say too, like, I'm very thankful that I was traveling this weekend because on the plane, all I did was listen to the album all the way through. 31 Perfect. Songs. A little over flavors. 2 hours straight.
Yeah.
Of nothing but T-Swizzle. I would love to hear your top five.
Okay. I want to lead off this by telling people, please don't worry about me with my choices. I do err towards the sadder songs, but don't worry. Sam's fine. Sam's happy.
Thank you for that disclaimer.
Yeah, no, it's important.
This is kind of a dark album.
It's so much. So number one for me in first place is The Black Dog. Second is I Can Do It With a Broken Heart. Third is But Daddy, I Love Him, which shout out to The Little Mermaid, which was made in 1989.
Yeah.
Fourth is Love of My Life, or LOML, which Lommel, talk about a plot twist at the end of that song. Mm-hmm. And then number five is Thank You, Amy. That's my top. I would love to hear yours. I'm actually on the edge of my seat.
I'm going to go 5-1 here.
I love that. Was a good idea.
I'm going to go really 5-1 here. Number five, Florida.
Oh, boom, boom, boom.
Like, I was vibing out to that song. I also live in Florida, so I feel like that has to be in my top five. Florence and the Machine, obviously Taylor Swift is in a category of her own.
Oh, Florence
and the Machine.
So good.
Phenomenal.
Such a good sound.
Phenomenal. At number four, I'm going Fortnite.
Nice. Vibey.
I like posts in it. I like all of the stuff on social media that came out around it. Just a good vibe. Just a good vibe of a song.
Ooh,
number three, I'm going I Can Do It All, or I Can Do It With a Broken Heart.
Excuse me. Fair.
I also feel like that song really relates well to an Enneagram 3 because it's like, I'm still going to achieve all these things.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it with a broken heart.
Yeah.
Love that song.
I love it.
Love that song. Number two, I have The Black Dog.
Are you serious?
Number two, I have The Black Dog.
Holy cow. I'm so pumped about that.
Yes. Great song.
I
also am the owner of a black dog.
No, that's fair.
So, but the lyrics in that song just really, really get me going. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was clever. Mm-hmm. And then number one, and again, I will preface this with I Am Okay. It's Down Bad.
It's like when you listen to this song without really listening to the words, you're like, oh, I'm bopping. And then you listen to the words, you're like, I'm dying inside.
Am I okay?
Yeah.
No, I had that multiple 100%. Times sitting on the plane. Like it was a very like, I felt like I was in a music video. I was staring out the window of a plane, looking at all this beautiful scenery. And I've got Taylor Swift in my headphones.
Down bad. That was amazing.
That's my top five.
I can't wait to see if that changes, stays the same over the course of the next few weeks of continuing to listen.
It might change. And I will preface that. My disclaimer is I wanted to be fair on what my favorite songs were. So I listened to the whole album through one time.
Smart. Good start.
So.
No, that's a great place to be.
Those are the ones that I start. So.
Well, now I guess we'll just lead into our top fives for softball now, I guess.
Yeah. The overall point of the podcast is softball, but culturally speaking, we could not miss.
No. And we know we've got some people who were doing the same thing as us this weekend, listening, bebopping, doo-wopping, and all of it.
Doo-wopping.
So do you want to start us with your softball top five?
I will start out with the softball top five. And again, I would like to throw a disclaimer. These are mine and Sam's personal top fives. These are not reflected in polls, but I am interested to see how we stack up against each other in the discussion that we are going to have here, because we are a little bit different.
Yes.
Here are my top five. Number one, I have Texas. They're number one in the RPI. They beat Oklahoma twice. Like, it's Texas. Number two, I have Tennessee. I do have Tennessee at number two. And here's why.
Yeah.
Tennessee has proven, and I can't believe I'm saying this, Tennessee to me has proven to be more consistent than Oklahoma has.
Okay.
I have Oklahoma at three.
Makes sense.
What I am seeing from Tennessee right now is I just really love it. So two orange teams are at the top. I've got Oklahoma at number three.
Mm-hmm.
At number four, I have Stanford.
All right.
And at number five, I have LSU.
Okay.
Now hear me out. Hear me out on Stanford. Because yes, they did just get swept. But let's look at the entire body of work. Okay.
Let's
look at the entire body of work.
Let us.
Football bracketology. Okay. Stanford has wins over Tennessee.
Yeah.
They have a win against Georgia.
Yeah.
And they have another really big top 25 win that's escaping me right now. Oh, they beat Texas. Oh, how about that?
Oh my God, they did beat Texas.
They beat Texas earlier in the year. So I find it hard to believe that I wouldn't include them in my top five just based off of those quality wins.
I love that.
And LSU also has a win against Texas.
Yeah, they do.
They're competing in the SEC. They've kind of taken a dip a little bit, but I can't overlook LSU swept Texas A&M.
Yeah.
You throw that win over Texas in there.
Dang.
They have a really deep pitching staff. They have been different offensively since Danica Coffey went out with the ACL injury. Mm-hmm. But I put a lot of trust in LSU right now. And people are going to probably come at me and be like, well, where's Duke? Like, I believe LSU would beat Duke in a three-game series right now.
I love that logic. I love that reasoning.
Mm-hmm. So that's mine.
That was great.
What's yours?
Okay. So the way that I was going through my top five was more off of the feelings that I was getting rather than the data. So that's also what I do when I go to pick my next book to read. I just let the book tell me. Like I will look at my bookshelves and say, all right, what is it? So that's kind of the same strategy that I had here.
I love that.
Number one, I have Texas. I don't think that there's an argument there. Obviously, Oklahoma is, I put Oklahoma as second. So for me, I think Oklahoma is absolutely the most dangerous team because nobody knows how to win more than Oklahoma does with this senior class specifically.
True.
But I think Texas pitching staff is the deepest in the country. And to me, you cannot win without deep pitching in this college game.
Nar.
You can't. So that's what edged them out for me was the deep pitching staff. So Texas, Oklahoma, and then I have Tennessee bringing up and hitting third. Like you said, everything you said, I agree with. They also a deep pitching staff, consistency, just
so consistent.
Aubrey Leach is on their staff.
We love Aubrey Leach. Wouldn't you love to see that in a series?
Yes.
Oklahoma and Tennessee. It's not going to happen in Supers. It would probably happen at the World Series. But...
And that's where we would want it to happen.
Oh, what a phenomenal series that would be.
Yeah, it would be great. And then, okay, my four and five are going to be where there's going to be questions. Four, I put Washington. In the same reason as Tennessee being consistent. Washington has, I think, been consistent. They've had a hard time sweeping. We've talked about that every week on the podcast, which again, they won two out of three against Cal this weekend. Like they haven't shut the door, but I also don't feel like they're leaving the door open, if that makes sense. Like I think Washington is still incredibly hard to beat.
Yes.
I don't know what's going on Sundays, but they've been so, it's not like they're getting blown out on Sundays.
Yeah. It's like 4-3 or 2-1 or
1-0 ball games. Like,
right.
So for me, Washington, I think, has crept up slowly in that they're still winning all these series.
Yes.
And then number five, I've got Duke. And the reason being is I always think about school where it's really hard to get your grade up, but it's really easy to drop your grade down, right?
That's
like
fair.
All it takes is one test and now you have a D. Duke, that's fair. Duke has competed really well, but I also think that last week they swept Clemson. Like, mm-hmm. I do think that they're competing for the team that they are, the way that they're competing. I can see them making the World Series this year. And yes,
I agree
that to
you.
Me, if Stanford would have taken one from UCLA, then I would have put Stanford in the five spot, I think.
Yeah.
So
I want Duke, and they can't control this because their schedule is their schedule. Mm-hmm. I want Duke to be a top five team.
Yeah. Yes.
I want to see Duke play Texas. I want to see Duke. They did lose to OU the very first game of the season, 3-0. And everyone took that as a moral victory.
100%. Duke,
which I would too. With 100%. OU winning like a million straight games. But I want them to, because they dropped a game to Campbell. They dropped a game.
That's right.
They did drop a game to Florida State, which I think them winning the series was great.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just feel like I want to see more. And I don't know if we're going to get that.
That's fair.
Until regionals or super.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's, I mean, you can get tested all season, but the real test comes when you step on the field for regionals.
Exactly right.
Truly.
And on the Stanford Washington train, we're going to get to see that live and in action this weekend.
Yes, so, we are.
Mark your calendars for that. Our friend Nyjah, friend of the program.
We love her.
Going up against Heather Tarr, another friend of the program.
We love everybody.
Man. Sis Bates, friend of the program, who we haven't had on yet, but probably should.
Oh, ASAP is ASAP. What we say there. But yeah, so that wraps up our top five. We did put time and effort, so be gentle with any feedback, people. Thank you, Bantees. We do also want to mention...
fans are probably going to roast me, but that's fine.
Sorry, Sooner family.
I'll take it.
We still have mad respect for the program, but
yes, we do.
We do want to mention that coming out on May 1st is the top 25 watch list for USA Softball Player of the Year. So stay tuned for that. It's always really exciting to see how these athletes have performed throughout the season and to see if they're, you know, rewarded essentially with being top 25 player. There's over 200 programs in Division I softball to be top 25. What a big honor. So
awesome.
Stay tuned for that. But you want to get some balance going in here?
I would love to get some balance going in here. Before we do that, I do want to thank Softball Store for, because Sam and I are matching this week.
That's okay. Right, baby.
For those of you just listening on the podcast and not watching on YouTube, we are wearing the softball capital of the world, Hall of Fame Stadium, sweatshirts. Again, I will reiterate over and over on this podcast, this is the most comfortable sweatshirt that I own. I wear it multiple times a week. I also wash it multiple times a week.
So it's important to note.
I'm just going to throw that out there. But if you want this, please go to usasoftballstore.com. for this and much more gear. And you can use code BHB15 and get 15% off your
It's a good deal. Purchase. It's a good deal in my opinion. A great deal, if you will.
It's a great deal. It's a great deal. Sam, do you want to kick us off with the Banty balance?
I would love to. This week we're talking about rhythm, about what happens when you get out of sync or out of your rhythm. Now that can be anything, right? That can be like somebody. You know what the worst thing I think of when I think of this is like you're walking up to bat and you're ready to roll and the other team calls timeout. That's what I'm envisioning with something like this of a break in rhythm. But this can also be you're on the road or you're somewhere new or your uniforms aren't like clean or something like that really messes with your routine. So I would love to know because anybody who's watched both of us, but especially Halo, you with your bat and the good breath stuff. And just like, yeah. It's just iconic. And tell me a little bit about you finding ways to be in sync, maybe when you're out of sync.
Yeah. So I think routine is super important. And I think you're going to hear that no matter where you're at in life, where you're at in softball, like everyone can probably agree on the fact that having routines is very, very important.
Yeah.
Like you and I both like to get to the field pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
We like to hop in the Normatec boots.
Yeah, we do.
Normatec, if you're out there and interested.
Yeah, we'll gladly take some off your hands.
Gladly we'll take some off your hands.
Thank you for consideration.
For the recovery for the old lady professional softball veterans here. But like we have certain routines that we want to get into, right? Like we pretty much do the same thing when we get to the ballpark. And when I am out of rhythm is when my routine is disrupted. So I've had to have like this balance, great word for the segment. But I have to have this balance of like being so strict to my routine of being like, I have to follow this exact plan. Versus like, this is just what where I feel like I'm performing best. It doesn't have to be this way all the time. And so when someone calls timeout in the middle of an at bat, or pitching coach wants to come and talk to the pitcher before my at bat, you can really get over analytical and be like, oh, well, they're going over this game plan and I bet this is what they're saying and yada yada yada. In reality, that doesn't really affect the result or the outcome of what's about to happen. At bat, in reality, like yes, my routine puts me in a way better headspace for my performance, but does me getting to the field 4 hours before the game precisely and doing every single thing the exact same way every single day, does that actually affect my outcome on one day? I personally don't think so.
Yeah,
so I think it's just having like a little bit of separation from my routine, still wanting to keep it, but keeping it like just at a healthy distance, if that makes sense.
It does.
You know?
That's, because I think one of the things to consider is not how are you when you're in your routine? It's how are you when you're not in it? Like if you can't get the things that you've set out that you like to have. And I like your wording where it's like, ideally, I'd like to have this, but I don't need to have this in order. Like I feel... Personally, I'm an extremely superstitious person, like down, like down to my hair tie, man. Like one of our volleyball athletes, Molly McCage, shout out to her. She gave us some new hair ties and I was like, I'm gonna try to wear a new hair tie. And we lost. I said, Molly, I appreciate you, but I cannot change my hair tie ever again. I can't believe I did it in the first place. But superstitions versus something to help you be in sync and be in your routine, I think are different where I'm setting myself up to be in this position for the game, for my pregame. But this is where it comes down to talking about like controlling what you can control. I can't control. I cannot control if the pitcher needs to talk to the catcher when I come up to bat or in the middle of an at bat. I can't control that. But what do I do? What do I do from there? Like, yeah, this isn't the rhythm of the at bat that I would have chosen, but I'm going to take some dry swings. I'm going to look at my dugout, get a little smile from assist Bates. You know, and then just, do some of that. But what you brought up was really funny. It reminded me in high school, my childhood best friend and I were on rival high school teams and she played first base for the rival high school, who I will not name because gross. Every time I went up to bat, she walked up to the pitcher and put her glove over her face and was like, you know, talking to her. After we graduated high school, she told me, hey, I never said anything when I walked up there. I just wanted you to think that I was talking about how to pitch to you. I was like, first of all, evil genius. Evil genius. She didn't say a word. She was just like, hey, I'm just over here and I'm putting my glove over my face so she thinks that I'm talking about her. And it would get in my head because I'm like, look, what he said, what are they saying? What are they, you know, like, what's she going to throw me now because of what she said? She didn't say a word. So
the anxiety that we give ourselves because we're assuming something else is going on.
She didn't say a word. So yeah, that's where you're like, what you're saying is like, whatever they're saying doesn't have an effect on how I'm approaching my at bat or the game.
Wow.
You know,
is there anything you do specifically? Like when you feel yourself get out of rhythm, like let's say you're in a game and you don't have time to like go back to the locker room and take 20 minutes to compose yourself. Is there anything you do quickly to like,
when I'm, hitting, especially, I feel like it's gets mental more so for me than defense, but I will, if you ever see me on deck taking 5 hard back-to-back swings without stopping, you know, that's because I'm trying to collect myself. That
interesting.
Just as fast as I possibly can, doesn't matter if they're good, just boom, boom, boom in a row on deck and get it out.
I love that.
Do you have anything?
What do you, is that like a release thing for you?
Yeah.
Like you're releasing anxiety?
Yeah, it's a way, because I can't always catch my breath. That's like a whole other conversation, but breathing deeply is sometimes challenging for me. So it's a way that I can take a deep breath without, like, I can just get it out. Okay, get it out of my body. Swing, 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 and then it's like a rise in heart rate to then have an amazing drop in the heart rate.
I am honestly obsessed with that. I stretch. Like, I will stretch and then take a really deep breath. Like,
I love
you
that.
Said.
Yeah.
And another thing I like to do is I like to wipe the dirt or the turf, like whatever I'm playing on.
Yeah.
And I always say, be where your feet are.
That's the thing of beauty.
In that moment.
Outstanding.
But it's just like a little tick for me. Like,
yes, a tick. Yes.
I feel like I have to talk to myself too, rather, because if you listen to yourself, you're in a really, really tough spot.
Yeah.
When it comes to rhythm and timing and all
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But
have you always done that? Has it been part of your, like, have, even when you were younger, like, that's what you would do to collect yourself? Or did you even know that? Or is it something that's happened later?
It's something I think I started doing in college just naturally,
Oh,
of just
yeah.
like, okay, wipe the dirt, like almost like a flush it type of
Yeah.
thing. Like when I had a call that didn't go my way or something like that, I would like just wipe the dirt, like get it out of there. But then when I heard the expression, be where your feet are, I was like, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
That's
I love
it for
that.
me. It really resonated with me. And it's, I felt like over the course of my career, I feel like it's an anchor I can always come back to.
That's huge.
Because when we play this game as long as we have, it's so easy to get caught up in the highest of highs and the lowest of lows.
Super
Like, oh,
easy.
I'm in a slump right now. Oh, I feel good right now. Oh, this reminds me of the season I had 4 years ago. And like,
Oh
it's
my God.
stop. Like, just
Yeah.
be where your feet are, be in the present moment, enjoy it, have fun, don't take it too seriously. Just
Rock and roll.
breathe and hit dingers.
Yeah, rock you like a hurricane.
Rock it like a hurricane.
Yeah, why not? Oh, outstanding. Love that.
That's
love
good
this
balance.
conversation. Would love to talk a little bit about the HPP program. Which also, I say HPP program, the second P in HPP is program, so I'm really
That
saying
it is.
high performance program. But
Yes.
it just
Program
rolls off.
squared.
Yeah. So the HPP squared in Dallas, Texas, had over 120 athletes this past weekend. They will be getting their evaluations and invites within the next week. Minnesota, May 5th date. This is actually news. The May 5th date has been changed to September 28th, 2024. I don't know why I said the year. Like, why would it be 2025? Anyway, so that May 5th date in Minnesota has changed to September 28th. The other May events that are coming up that are remaining in those same dates are Honolulu, Hawaii, May 11th, and Houston, Texas on May 19th. And if you are interested in finding out more information on other identifiers or just more about the program in general, you can visit hpp.usasoftball.com for all that information. And Halo, what's coming up this weekend? I know you already mentioned a little Pac-12 rivalry, but what else we got going on?
Yeah, yeehaw. We've got a ton of really good softball that's coming up this weekend.
Yeah, we do.
We're getting into what's cool about the timing of where we're at right now is we're getting into like the nitty gritty of series and like who's going to be like seated where for the conference tournaments.
Yeah.
And then that's going to determine like who gets to host regional. So like we're on
Yeah.
the cusp of postseason softball, which
Yeah.
is so exciting. And there's a lot hanging on these weekend matchups. We mentioned
Yeah.
Stanford and Washington.
Mm-hmm.
That is in Seattle too, which
Ooh.
I think could potentially make a difference for
Yeah, for sure.
Our fight in Heather Tars there. We've got Tennessee at Alabama.
How are you
And
feeling?
Alabama needs a win.
Yeah.
They need a series win. They have one SEC series win on the year, and it's against last-ranked Ole Miss.
Yeah. So nothing like going up against Tennessee to try to get that series
It's
win.
In Tuscaloosa.
Good. Good for them.
But good pitching travels well. So I'm just going to leave that there. I am obviously rooting for the Tide, but Tennessee has looked ultra impressive.
Yeah.
They're sitting
Yeah.
atop the SEC, and in all likelihood, they're probably going to be the number one seed going into the tournament. You also
Yeah.
got Florida at Georgia.
Florida Georgia line. I'm
The
sorry.
Florida Georgia, I mean, it was right there in front of
Yeah.
you. It was laid up on a tee.
Yep.
Georgia has not done so great in conference play. They got a series
Right.
win this past weekend. Florida has dropped their past. No, sorry. They dropped the series to Mizzou They had a tough series this weekend against South Carolina.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be really interesting, and I think it could go either way.
Yeah. No, I'm really, with you completely.
It's going to depend on how what Florida and Georgia pitchers show up.
Yep.
Because the offense is going to be there, and it's going to be popping.
It could be a 12-10 game kind of weekend, or it could be a 3-2 kind of game weekend. So we're going to find out.
And that's why you need to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, tune in.
That's why you need to watch. And only the two most iconic programs in college softball history will be going up against each other in Arizona and UCLA. So
you think of in-state rivalries. We had a lot of that last weekend, but there's just something about UCLA Arizona. It's just so historic.
It's different.
It's kind of what Oklahoma and Texas has been becoming lately as well. Like another really good rivalry in conference. Like UCLA Arizona is just the OG rivalry with all the natty champs.
Yes.
All
that's a
all
great comparison. This will be unfortunately the last three game series in conference play for these programs.
I don't do well with change.
It's unbelievable to think about there not being I know it's because of football. I totally get that, and I understand that. I understand the money. I get it.
Yeah.
But strictly in terms of softball, the pack going away is one of the saddest things in our sport.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to leave that there. And I will be an emotional wreck probably watching Arizona and UCLA.
Yeah, what a note to end on, man. That was some tortured poets department right there.
Let's call Taylor and see if she can write a song about it.
No, truly. Hey, the pack's ending. Let us know how you feel. Thank you. I need it in words because I cannot put it.
The tortured Pac-12 softball department.
Okay. On that note, I can't wait for you guys to listen to what's coming. So thanks for being with us. We love you so much.
At Higginbotham, we put people first. Our specialists are here to serve you, the people you care about, and your success. Insurance, HR, and financial services. Inspired by you.
All right, Banties, we are more than thrilled. We are over the moon to be able to welcome our guest in today. Started out as a fast pitch player and then an umpire, has worked for the national office for I won't say how many years because I don't want to age him. He started out in memberships and then has now become the CEO of USA Softball, one of the most important and integral parts of getting softball back into the Olympics in 2020 and in 2028. One of the just carriers of the torch for the game of softball. We are joined by none other than Craig Kress, who, by the way, also has a voice that was made to be on a podcast. So, Craig, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Halo. Definitely a better voice for podcasts and radio than TV. So I do appreciate that.
You could do it all. Honestly, you could do it all.
I told Halo, I was like, I got to just ask Craig if anybody has told him that he should voice like that. Your voice is close to Mufasa. I'm just saying. So
it really is. The more I talk, the deeper it gets. Somebody asked me the other day, said, do you have a cold? And I said, no, I just been on the phone a lot. So it gets deeper as the week goes on. So
I love it.
You know, it's definitely my pleasure to be here with the two of you. I've watched your podcast and what you've done, and I think it's extremely important what we've added here. And you know, as far as the Olympics and stuff goes, it's you, the athletes, that it's the most important thing for. You know, and Halo, I know you don't want to date me because I would date you. I think it's important to do that.
You are not wrong.
That's so true.
Because I've been a CEO, I think, when your first year in the program at the 19 and under worlds in Canada.
In Canada, that's right.
I won't give the year so people can't figure it out, but that's the year I became the CEO. And you've been put up with me for several years now. So,
yeah. Man, it's been nothing but a pleasure.
It has. Yeah. It's been a great pleasure. So getting to meet your family and spending time with them and just, you know, being around the athletes. It keeps me young, and I appreciate that.
I love it.
So, Craig, I would love to hear just like the journey. Like Halo said, you know, started as the umpire. Now you're sitting here talking about being the CEO and how long that's been. How has each stage kind of happened? Is it something you envisioned one day being, or take us through that?
I started playing a game when I was in high school, actually. It wasn't faring too well on the baseball team, and friends of mine said, hey, come out and give this fast pitch softball game a try. And I fell in love with it. I mean, faster paced, shorter field, obviously more intimate in there, and the 60-foot bases and stuff. And still had a good time. I'm like everybody else, couldn't hit the rise ball when you first start. From that standpoint,
still can't for me.
I won't comment there because I quit trying from that standpoint. It's actually sitting at the ballpark one night, just watching games, and they were an umpire short, and the home plate umpire knew that understood the game a little bit, and he goes, hey, you want to come out here and help me umpire and do the game with me? And that's kind of where it started. And then I found out I was a lot better umpire than I was a player. I had a lot more opportunities as an umpire. I did 10 national championships in my time frame.
Wow.
Did a couple of world assignments. Got to hang with some cool athletes, men's and women's side. I was more a men's umpire. I was in the mid 90s, we were kind of asked which track we were on, whether it was to do the men's world championship in 96 or do the Olympics in 96. And I was just more comfortable in the men's game. I mean, I enjoyed the women's game. I got to travel with the women in 1998 to New Zealand for an event and hang out with Lisa and Michelle and people like that. So, as the traveling umpire, and then the tournament starts and both sides stop talking to each other until it's over. So, you know how that works from that standpoint. But, and then I got in on the administration side. I'm originally from Indiana. So I became the umpire in chief there, and then the umpire in chief for the region, which at that time was Cincinnati, Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, Illinois. Like I said, it's been a great journey. As far as coming to the office, yeah, I had aspirations when I should be the national director of umpires at one point in time.
Cool.
Little did I know that I would come here and be the boss of the national director of umpires. So it's kind of like the best thing that could happen from that standpoint. I got to be in the membership services side, which took care of the players, teams, and the umpires. So it was a great journey. I mean, I've seen a lot of changes in my 22 years here in the office, from that standpoint. So, but it's been a great journey. And, without the sport of softball and without ASA then and USA Softball now, I couldn't have done the things that I've been able to do and travel to the countries that I've been able to do. And to be around amazing people at every turn of the game, whether they're administrators, umpires, players, it's just been a great venture and a great journey. And no other place I'd rather be than USA Softball.
Love that.
That's so awesome. Was there any like one particular event or something that happened in your journey throughout softball that made you say, like, I want to commit like my full-time job to this? Like, where did those aspirations come from?
I would have to say it was in my umpiring career, just because of the fact that I was having, what other people would tell me was great success. I felt good on the field. I felt the opportunity to relate to the players and to work with the coaches and, do the best job I could do. I mean, did I miss pitches? Did I miss calls? Absolutely. We are all humans. And, I always wonder how it would fare in this replay world that we have now. Part of me would love to give it a shot, but then, that's past me from that standpoint. But it was just being a part of the game and not being the player but still thinking like a player. That's one of the things we try to talk to umpires about is that, before the ball's hit, what's the logical play? Where should you position yourself to put yourself in the best position you can be in for the toughest call you're going to have? And I always tell umpires that, if you want to learn a lot about umpiring and movement, do some 10 and 12 and under softball games, because they do the unknown that you have to be.
You don't know what.
I mean, and that's not a dig against them. That's just reality.
Totally.
And, they're still learning the game and, they're going to, they're human, they're young humans, they're going to make mistakes. So they don't always do they, you know, ground ball back to the pitcher with a run on first, you know, they don't always turn and throw to second. You know, with less than 2 outs. So you always have to anticipate, but you also have to also be prepared for the unknown. And one of the things I think I took from umpiring is, you know, treat the people on the field the same way you want to be treated. Be yourself, do your thing. You can't be anybody else. And then just do the best job that you can do in whatever you're doing, whether it's scorekeeping, umpiring, coaching, playing, just a passion for the game. And I've always been a sports minded individual. So from that standpoint, there's a few incidents that I remember that happened. I mean, I did upper men's leagues when I first came in as a 17, 18 year old umpire. I was doing the guys that I played against in the lower level league, but they were playing in the upper level league. And they didn't always like younger people being their umpires. And, you know, we had a situation where the catcher decided to get out of the way of the pitch.
Ugh.
So,
come on.
You know, and I'll be honest, we were good friends after that. And I mean, just from a standpoint, he did what he thought was right. And I definitely did what I thought was right because he was ejected and removed for 2 weeks. And
there you go.
Game forfeited, and he appealed, but his appeal was denied. And we became actually close friends after that.
I mean, I love that. That's awesome. I don't
hold any grudges. I mean, like I said, from that standpoint. But hey, you live and learn from it. And I know that I always learned more from mistakes that I made. And then when I had a good game and what people thought I was pretty good at. So,
yeah,
you know,
that's, I honestly wanted to ask that, like, if you know, going through everything as an umpire, being a player, and then seeing from this side of things, do you have anything to say to parents and players and things? Because, man, there are times where I think we're not going to have any umpires because of the way that they're being treated. Like, what do you have that you learned that you would like people to know about being an umpire?
You know, being an umpire is a tough job. And,
yeah.
And the reason I say that, the younger you are, you know, it's a fine line. As an older umpire and you're working with a younger umpire, you want to help them, but you don't want to come across as protecting them. Because then when you're not around, then they don't have the opportunity to grow. Because as I said, I think you grow from your mistakes that you make.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as parents, coaches, you know, put yourself in their position. Are you an umpire? Have you done this before?
Right.
No. If you haven't, try it. You'll understand it.
Yeah.
I think that society today, it's sad that we've had to put some of these laws in certain states to protect officials and such.
Mm-hmm.
They're needed in certain areas. The other tough thing is that when we do championships, we've got personnel there to assist the umpires. But 90% of their games are being done in non-supervised opportunities in league games and professional tournaments on the weekend and things like that. So it's really tough when you don't have that additional support and things like that. So I just ask people, you know, remember they're humans. Remember that not everybody starts out perfect. Hardly anybody gets to perfect. Not everybody has a perfect game every time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from that standpoint, otherwise they wouldn't have replay. They wouldn't have statistics
right.
on umpires, on MLB umpires, on how many potential pitches they might have missed.
Yeah.
You know, from that standpoint, it's, you know, it is a tough deal, and it's a low paying deal in the rec leagues. I mean, if you work your way up into the college and stuff like that, yeah, that can be lucrative, but you have to put a lot of time and effort into getting there. And have to stay. Statistic that we're not proud of is if we can keep somebody for 3 years as an umpire, we usually got them. But the average umpire lifespan is only about 1.8.
Wow.
People who last 2 or 3 months, you know, so you got more of those than you got the ones that make it beyond.
Right.
Wow. So, that's so interesting.
Yeah, that's wild.
The people I talk to the most probably about trying to protect and help their umpires is the league administrators and the tournament directors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make sure that you're putting them in a safe environment.
Mm-hmm.
When they leave the field, when they're going to the field, you know, you don't have to agree or defend all their calls. You just need to provide them with a safe environment for them to do the avocation that they love, and then to go home safely and to want to come back again.
Yeah. Wow. It's like so deep.
That is so deep. And I think that's so good for a lot of parents out there to hear, and even athletes too that are listening to this, because so often I know when we get to the higher and higher levels of our sport, we don't realize often how much work and preparation and study that goes in on the umpire's side.
Right.
That they're doing the absolute best job that they can. And that's coming from me, who has a tendency to have conversations. We'll just put it that way. I love talking. I love talking. I love seeing different perspectives and points of view. So I love talking to the umpires in a respectful way.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, when I was doing the college game back then, it's like a lot of coaches didn't want their athletes talking to the umpire.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Right.
You know, and like I said, coming from Indiana, I had the great pleasure of umpiring. That was when the schools went out and got their umpires. And I did a doubleheader of every Big Ten conference game at Indiana University. Well, that's when I had the good fortune of Michelle Venturella, former Olympian.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Michelle caught for IU, left-handed catcher, which is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But she'd come out and we'd talk, and her coach one time walked like, "You guys shouldn't be, you don't need to be talking to him," or something like that. And I know that she just looked at me and she was, "Don't worry about it, we're good." And you know, that was just a part of it. It helps you relax and helps you get engaged in the game and things like that. You know, and back to you guys as athletes, you know, you're coming from something, you know, you might have had a workout, you might have had a class when you're in college. Things didn't go all the way you wanted to go there. You know, how hard was it to leave that thought process and attitude in the locker room?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at umpires. They're coming from, a lot of them doing our rec ball, they were coming from 8 to 5 jobs.
Yeah.
But, they had to leave their work attitude, or their attitude that might have happened to them at work. Or, you know, the kid's not happy about something, you know, and so it's affecting you. So it's important that we all, you know, got to learn how to leave that fungus, that attitude in the car when you get out to play the game or to go umpire the game.
Yeah.
Love that. Leave the fungus.
Yeah. Get rid of that.
Leave it.
It's going to grow. It'll leave it to grow somewhere else.
Eject it. All you got to do is close it in the car door when you get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lock it up. It's so funny. I think about my number one thing that I say to umpires is, after I've like swung at a pitch, I turn them like, "Was that going to be a strike?" Most of the time they say, "No, Sam, no, it wasn't." But I would love to transition into talking a little bit about USA softball. Some of the things that we've talked about on the podcast is what people don't really know. And USA softball is the national governing body of softball. Could you explain what that actually means and the impact that it has on USA softball?
Yeah, sure. You know, a lot of acronyms in our world.
Yes.
You know, with USA Softball, the USOPC, which is United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, you know, the NGB, which is National Governing Body. You know, and we are very lucky and fortunate to be the national governing body for our sport. We're the only one that can send athletes to an event. Whether it be the Olympic Games or a World Cup or a Pan American Championship, that has, you know, USA across the front of their jersey.
Yeah.
You guys have all talked about the pride that brings when you wear that jersey. Well, it's the same pride we have, because as the NGB, we're the ones that put you in that position to do it. And
we're
recognized by the United States Olympic Committee as the NGB for our sport. And that's really huge. There's a lot of other softball organizations out there doing their thing. And I respect them all. But we're the only ones that can do the NGB stuff. Mm-hmm. But as I tell my council members all the time, you know, with that opportunity to be the NGB comes responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do that maybe some other organizations don't have to do. You know, we're an organization, we've been doing background checks since 2012. We find it imperative, and we've made changes and improved the checks that we've been doing each and every year, and we'll continue to do that. But we're very proud that we're doing our best to try to put athletes in a safe environment. Whether that be the youth athlete playing the 10 and under, whether it's an 18 and under athlete or even the national team. I mean, our coaches and our players that participate in our national team program are background checked and safe sport educated. And that's the other requirement from the standpoint of being the NGB. Unfortunately, we had some negative stuff in sports that happened to some of the other NGBs and, the Larry Nassar situation. There's no other way but just that.
Right.
Those poor victims of his that you know had to live through what they lived through, and it needed to bring some reforms to what we do in sport, and that's what and the reason that we created the U.S. Center for Safe Sport back in the 17 timeframe. Moving 17 to 18. We've always had USADA. It's been there.
Yeah.
Of our drug testing.
Knocking down our doors.
Finding us.
What time it is or anything like that.
You better be there.
Got to fill out your whereabouts cards and all that. Right. So, but I mean, it's another extremely important group and a tough job from that standpoint.
Yeah. And I know you were recently too, Craig, you went to the House of Representatives to discuss safe sport and youth sports, right? Yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Like, what a cool opportunity.
Yeah,
it was cool from the standpoint. I was supposed to have done it last October, and that's when they had the issue with the speaker stepping down or being removed and having to come up with a new speaker. So it was rescheduled for March, and went there and was a part of a four-person hearing panel that was asked to testify. We testified before the oversight and committee that's a part of the Commerce and Energy Committee. So it's a subcommittee of that. I had the pleasure with the help of our commissioners in Virginia of meeting the chairman of the Oversight Committee, Morgan Griffith. He's a congressperson out of Virginia. And he, him and his aide really felt like that, you know, we had something. You know, one of the first questions they asked is, are you here to get rid of Safe Sport? And we said, no. We appreciate it and what it does. We're just
with
all the other organizations, because I figured there are probably almost a million kids playing other organizations that are not protected by Safe Sport.
Yeah.
You know, so when we did the hearing testimony, it's a little daunting. I mean, from the standpoint, you got to raise your right hand and say, I will. So that was unique. And, but you know, the other people testifying were Jerise Coleman. She's the CEO of the U.S. Center for Safe Sport. And then Nicole Deal, the head security officer from the USOPC. Mana Shim, she's a soccer player and unfortunately a victim of abuse. And myself. And it was really about, leveling the playing field and making sure that the center is doing all that they can do to protect athletes. But each, it started off with them giving 5-minute opening remarks. Four of them did, the chair, the ranking member, and a couple other individuals. And then we all four gave our testimony. Everything's limited to 5 minutes. That clock's up there ticking, so make sure you get your stuff. Everything's on the record. And then after that, then they go into each committee member gets 5 minutes to ask questions.
Wow.
So it was 5 minutes of asking these questions. And, you know, they're educated on what the Ted Stevens Sports Act is, which is what created the NGB and the USOC at that time, the USOPC now. So they're familiar with that legislation. They're familiar with what they changed when they put the Safe Sport Act when it was signed into law, and they're familiar with what the Safe Sport Center is. But they, you know, because of just getting that big picture, they think that all groups that provide youth sports, whether it be softball or hockey or soccer, that they're all go to the U.S. That they all go to the NGBs to be a part of their membership.
And yeah, it's not the case.
That's not the case.
No,
and that's, you know, that was a part of the education. And you know, I've gotten a lot of comments back from the aides and people like that that were there, and you know, felt like that we obviously Ms. Shim Manna was, you know, without doubt was asked a lot of questions and stuff because of her situation. From, you know, and I sat next to her, so, and she handled it extremely well. I mean, she's a very brave person.
Love that.
Through, so.
That's
but
amazing.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that it brings awareness, you know, to the fact that there are other options out there, and I get those options. But as a parent, and myself as a grandparent now, looking at these organizations, are they background checking their coaches?
Mm-hmm.
Are their coaches being educated on safe sport and the awareness of it and what to do? And are they doing everything we can do to protect our athletes? And that's the awareness that we're trying to drive. And, you know, I'm not sure what's going to be the next step, you know, from that standpoint. But it was a great experience for me, and it was a great opportunity for us just to continue to make those folks that can make a difference in laws and legislation, that they're aware of, hey, you've got this started, but we're not done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it goes down to being proactive versus being reactive, right? Like everything came out about gymnastics and Larry Nassar, mm-hmm. and this had been going on for so long with so many young athletes, and people are like, well, what do we do now? It's like, no, what do you do? What do you set in place so that something like this doesn't happen? So you don't have to react to it. You just are proactive and you don't, these situations just don't happen and the kids are protected. So I think it's amazing to take those steps before and to put things, you know, in place so that you're protecting them up front instead of cleaning up a mess after the fact.
Yeah. That's the last place we want to be, is, you know, at USA Softball is clean up a mess afterwards. That we want to
truly
do what we can to get it out there. And, you know, it's just simple things like don't have contact with a minor athlete one-on-one, even via text messaging.
Right.
It's just not something we do. I mean, that's why we have the WhatsApp list, and that way everybody's getting the same thing. And, and I know that when our staff gets a direct message from an athlete, we make sure that we copy back the parent on our response.
Just
things like that, you know, in some cases are common sense, but, you know, we also get a little comfortable at times, you know, people out there doing, they say, well, you know, they message me directly, so I'll message just them directly. And that's not where we want to be.
Right.
We want to make sure that we keep our respect going for the process.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I know, Craig, you being at the top of USA Softball, clearly athlete safety is one of the top priorities. Could you maybe touch on a few of the other top priorities that, you know, you deal with and implement every single day for athletes, coaches, parents, everyone under, you know, the USA Softball umbrella?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of different things here. I mean, somebody's always kidding me. And it's like, oh, softball season's over, so you're not really doing anything.
Yeah, no.
You know, from that standpoint. But, you know, it's like right now we're gearing up for our we start our stadium events because we have we're lucky to have our complex here. That the city maintains for us and funds, does a lot of funding. I can't say enough about the city of Oklahoma City and what they've done. And, you know, I think everybody's seen the transformation of our stadium on TV and the athletes that have been here to see what we've done. And we're going to continue to make improvements. That's what we're here for. And like I said, we're just grateful for the city of Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we're here to assist our 64 local associations in the field. Every state has a local association. Some of the larger states are more populated states have multiple associations. So we have a membership department that supports those folks. We have our own registration system. And so we have IT people that support those from the back, you know, in the IT world to be able to get registered, make sure that they're getting their benefits such as insurance and such. And then primarily on my day, so you guys are making me have a great day. I do a lot of legal and insurance type work. Yeah, you know, it we always have to remember it's a business that we do run here. And, you know, from that standpoint, we're in 501c3. So we have a lot of, you know, we got USOC responsibilities, we got city responsibilities, we got support responsibilities, we have 501c3 guideline responsibilities. You know, we go through an audit by a separate firm each and every year to make sure our finances are good. you know, we post our 990s online, you know, so everybody can see the amount of money that comes in. We have to be a very open as a 501c3, and so that we're, you know, above reproach when it comes to where's your money go.
Right.
And that's why we have the 501c. And, you know, and you guys have both been a part of this, the great thing we started in the last few years, the HPP program.
Yeah.
Yes.
The pipeline to, you know, that was a creation when we had COVID, when we couldn't be doing what we were supposed to be doing with our national team going to different tour stops and things like that. So gave us time to think. And, you know, the HPP program has been great. You know, it was great to take the team to the 15U team to go in the World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, it was chosen out of the HPP. I'm excited that we did it for the 18 and under coming up here in the Stage 1 Dallas event.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we have, as the year goes on, and we, after all of our national championships, which there's close to 100 national championships, that our local associations actually do the work on. We're just here to support them.
Mm-hmm.
But in the October, November timeframe, and I know that you've been here, Sam, we have an annual business meeting.
Yeah.
You've been here. And, you know, I think we've done a lot of work in the last 2 or 3 years to give athletes such as yourself more work to do, I guess, is the best way to put it, because we want, you know, we need athlete engagement at that, mm-hmm. from that upper level athlete, and so that we can make our organization better as we move forward. So
yeah,
we don't do too much, but no, the one thing I always tell people about my job, it's like I may have a set thing or a list of things I want to get done. But if I want to get any of those done, it's in here before 8 o'clock, or it's starting from my house early in the morning to get that list done. Because when I get here at 8, we usually have to react to any potential situations that's happening.
Right. Yeah.
Especially in the summertime when there's national championships going on, that could be a wide range.
Yeah.
So, but
I love it.
I hope that kind of answered the question. And
it did.
Yeah.
And some.
And
yeah, well. Sorry about that.
No, you're good. It's so good for people to know, because I think people sometimes will just see USA Softball and automatically think of just the national team or just, you know, the Olympic roster, like whatever it is. And it's like, no, like there are so many other things in the day-to-day national championships, from the highest level of Team USA Olympian all the way down to the lower levels, like state and national championships. So it's really cool for people to understand that it's a massive organization that does so many good things for the young softball players in this country.
It is massive. We've got a lot of great volunteers out in the field doing their job. And, you know, and like I said, it's just our job here to support them the best we can. Each entity, they're their own 501c entity. So, you know, they want to do things differently. They do things that best suits their location and the clientele that lives in their area.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to support a lot of different ways of doing things. But when we come together and play our national championships, we're playing under the same set of rules, and everybody plays the same way. So, but yeah, that's it's a big thing. And then, but you're right, Halo. A lot of people just see the national team stuff, because that's the sizzle. I mean, that's that's, you know, that's what the people know look for. It's the ones that wear the USA across the front of their jersey and things like that. I mean, it's just like, you know, the NCAA World Championship that we hold here every year. It's a big event for us. I think the one thing that people don't realize, that's half of the number of people we bring here every year. We have events that total up to that same number of over 100,000 people that come for that week. And all of the other things that we do. But we do.
Amazing.
We host the Oklahoma High School State Championships for fast pitch, which is in the fall. We host it for slow pitch, which is coming up here the first part of May.
Mm-hmm.
The Big 12 tournament, which with this conference realignment is ever changing.
Yeah. Right.
You know, this is the last year of OU and Texas being at the Big 12.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also, this year, we got some new great additions in you know, with Central Florida and BYU and Houston, you know, just it's exciting to have, you know, to give. I look at it this way. We try to give as much opportunity we can to players around the world to get a play at the softball capital of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From that standpoint. And, you know, we're extremely proud of the facility we have. So.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, truly. Rightfully. I remember the first time I played there, I was 17 at Gold Nationals. And even then, which I'm not going to date myself and tell everybody what year that was, but even then it was, oh, this is where it happens. This is where you go when you're a softball player. And then even now getting to play there as an adult, playing there the first time with Team USA, like just seeing the evolution of just being there, there's something really special about it. And you can feel it. You can feel it when you step on the field. You can feel it in the town, in the city.
Yes.
That this really is softball central, softball capital of the world.
Yes. Okay. It's holy ground out there.
That's it. Yep. It
really is.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're, like I said, we're trying to do a lot of different things. We do a lot of adult slow pitch here. We do the border battle. This is hard to believe. This is our 14th year of the border battle. We started back in 2009, and then we didn't have it obviously for a year or two because of COVID.
Right.
But you know, we kept that going strong. We're back here in our facility in July, and then we have the pleasure we're hosting a men's World Cup. One of the first stages of the World Cup for this year. It's we've got six countries. It's us and Japan and two from the Americas and South Africa, and then a team from Europe. It's in September. So, you know, our men's basketball program has been here to play before. They're like everybody else. They love it.
Yeah.
How can we play here every year? And it's like, you know, that's a question that a lot of people ask is how you play here every year.
Yeah.
But it's great. And then, you know, I think we've worked really hard to be try to be a leader. And with the Softball Americas, WBSC Americas, as well as the WBSC, the World Baseball Softball Confederation. And, you know, that's where I spend some of my time. Those are my early mornings as being part of the executive board and being the president of the softball division for that.
So, that's so cool.
No, well, it's all about the passion in the sport and just getting
the community. Well, Halo always has the most perfect question to we could talk about this all day, but I know
we really could,
you know, learning the ins and outs and everything that USA Softball provides, and sitting here having this podcast is because of USA Softball. Like Halo and I get to have this opportunity to talk about most of our experiences come from USA Softball and then beyond. So she's got a great wrap up question though. I know she loves to lay this one on our guests. So, Halo?
I do love asking this question. Craig, if you could give advice to your younger self, be it as a player, umpire, whoever you are at the time, what would it be and why?
Oh, I would have to say that because I came up in the umpire world, you know, we were taught that there was not much gray, Halo. The call's either out, safe, fair, foul. You know, from that standpoint, I think that the thing I would give advice, and I do this a lot to a lot of people, change is inevitable. And, you know, embrace change. Accept it. Because if you're not accepting of change, you know, in what society does, in the cards we've been dealt, I mean, with COVID, the whole business world changed on how you do business.
Yeah.
From that standpoint. So, you know, I was probably tough because I was brought up in that non-gray world as an umpire. And I mean, I came from a world where that's, you know, we were expected to make decisions. And now it's you need to accept change. You need to understand that not all change is bad.
Right.
There's a lot of change that's really good. And, you know, I'd hear people say, well, we got a lot of changes this year in our proposals for our playing rules in our code. And I said, well, good. It gives us an opportunity to discuss them. And from that standpoint. But I think that embracing change is extremely important. And then, you know, just continuing to always put yourself in other people's thought processes. Because when we're here at the office and we're talking about change here, you need to think about the ramifications, you know, and how's that going to affect the other individuals? You know, is it the right thing for everybody, or is it just the right thing for a few? And we always have to do what's the greater good for the game, and the greater good for the business.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, that's such good advice.
It's great advice.
But other than that, it's just good old fun times. So
yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Some of my funnest days here on Friday afternoons when there's an event going on outside and had a tough phone call or a tough morning and I get to go out and sit in the stands and listen to people just cheer and watch the kids play or watch the adults play. And
that's so sweet.
You know, it's just like a couple of weeks ago we hosted Special Olympics and our
awesome.
Staff, you know, they took turns going out and keeping score and announcing the games, you know, from that standpoint. And that's important. That's
yeah.
Definitely, it's one of our favorite events here every year. Trust me. It's a
yeah.
Very humbling experience to watch those athletes.
I love that.
Awesome.
Man, Craig, thank you. Thanks for taking the time with us today and sharing your journey and sharing more about USA Softball. I swear, I feel like I keep learning about what USA Softball does. There's so much, but we're grateful for you and USA Softball as a whole, because shoot, we've gotten so much. Halo has an Olympic medal because of it, you know, like
literally
it's a staple in our lives at the end of the day, truly like a yep. staple in our lives. So we appreciate you and everything that you guys do over there to keep pushing forward for the sport that we all know and love.
Yeah. I appreciate it, what you guys are doing. And this has been great. When I was given the questions were on the list, I was kind of chuckling. I said, we're not going to get halfway through those. So. you know, and I'm very happy for Halo to have the, you know, the Olympic medal. And that's, you know, at that upper level, that's the goal. We want more and more
mm-hmm.
athletes to have that opportunity to play for those medals. And,
yeah,
you know, and World Cups are important and World Cups are fun and they're highly competitive. We're
yeah.
going to find out this year in Italy how competitive they are with
the
final eight countries that we have. But there's nothing like even in a COVID restricted environment, there's nothing like the Olympic environment from that standpoint. And it'll be great to be in the 28 Olympics and to not be one of the 100 people sitting in the stands and watching a game, you know, to be able to share live audiences and everything else. So, but I can tell you right now, when we were pitching to LA, the athletes and their support and their love for the game makes a huge difference. I mean, an individual you've already talked to on this podcast, Janie Reed.
Yep.
She was on that with her and I had the pleasure to sit on that committee with and sell LA. And I'll be honest, it was her and Eddie Alvarez who did the selling.
Mm-hmm.
It was just our job to give facts and details and ideas on stuff. But they use their passion for the sport and sold it. So it's the athletes that just keep selling our sport. It's just our job to be here to help them and anything that they need to get that sales job done.
That's awesome.
That's so cool. We'll see you in 2028, Craig. Can't
absolutely.
Wait.
2028.
Awesome. Yes, I mean, we will see you before then. We'll be
beforehand, but yeah.
But so we'll literally see you like in a month and a half. And then... 2028 as well.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, I look forward to you guys having to put up with me for, you know, through those years to get us to 2028.
Heck yeah. We're ready for it.
The pleasure's ours.
So
thanks, Craig.
Thank you, Craig.
Appreciate you.
We'll see you soon.
Yep. You too. Bye.
Team USA has brought me opportunities that I never thought I would have before. And I'm super humbled to be able to represent my country.
There's so much talent in the United States playing softball right now, and we want to see the game continue to grow and prosper and develop.
I want to develop not just men, but women's softball as well.
I want to see more girls like me playing this sport.
I just hope one day that I could be somewhat mentioned, like a Natasha Watley, to help this game.
I just remember watching everyone in the Olympics, and you guys just representing this country, and for me playing USA softball, I just want to do the same.